Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hello and welcome to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Oswald, and I hope you join me on my quest for knowledge to become a better hunter, angler, and forager. Stick with this and who knows, maybe we will learn something together. So before we get started on the show, I want to talk about a few things. I want to talk about the giveaway I'm doing on the Western Hunting Summit. So I'm giving away a spot to the Western Hunting Summit in Bozeman, Montana, with Ryan Lampers that he puts on. And there's going to be some awesome, awesome people there teaching you all kinds of things and advancing your hunting experience so you can get years ahead of where you would. Flatten that learning curve, if you will. I went last year and it was absolutely amazing, and I wanted to share that experience with somebody. So with that being said, send an email to admin@publiclychallenged.com telling us why you think you should go. Follow Publicly Challenged on Instagram. Follow Western Hunting Summit on Instagram, and also Initial Ascent, because they're going to be giving away a 2K pack to the lucky winner who gets to go out there. So not only are you going out there, but you get a brand new pack to go out there with. So follow Initial Ascent, and thanks Dennis and Joe for stepping in and doing that. Initial Ascent packs are awesome. I got one, and I used it all last season. Same exact pack the winner is going to be receiving, so that's pretty cool. Also, want to talk about Basemap. Basemap Hunt Fish, awesome app. It's probably one of the coolest because the price point is way lower than all of the other ones out there, and you can do all the same features, and they even have hunt data stuff that I'm using right now for my next elk hunt, and that's definitely pretty cool. So check it out. Use the promo code PC25 and save yourself 25% on sign up, but you got to do it online on the website. Don't do it on the app or you won't be able to use the promo code. With that being said, thank you so much, and let's get to the show. All right, so I'm sitting here and I am talking to Mark Warnke. And Mark, you got pretty interesting business kind of going on here. So you want to go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I've been in the hunting industry a long time. I've been a public land hunter myself for a long time. I've killed 29 elk with a bow. I've killed almost 100 animals with archery tackle all over the world. I've been bow hunting the world now for 30 years, but my sweet spot is big elk and big deer. And when I say big, I really have killed a lot of really super solid muleys, but I haven't killed a lot of giant elk. Elk are for the freezer and muleys are for the wall. I like eating deer, but I love eating elk. And so it's just really hard for me to pass up 20 yards no matter what it is. And I still love calling them in, and we could kill two a year. So it lets me shoot the first one, and then I get to, you know, be selected on the second one. That just ended this year. But anyway, little rabbit holes. But I'm known for two things. As one of the founding, you know, hunting consultants in the country, I'm the guy you call to put together a hunt for almost anything in the world. I specialize in elk deer. That company's called Toppin Adventures. And in the process of being a backcountry hunter and doing a lot of backcountry scouting and just backpacking, I came across pack goats 9 years ago. There wasn't a lot of information out there. There wasn't a lot of good gear out there. So I started putting the gear. I started putting out the information. Now packgoats.com is a thriving and burgeoning business that is almost overtaking Toppin Adventures, and something I really enjoy doing, and whatever they want to know more about Packgoats. So that's primarily what we're here to talk about, but I have references to global hunting.
Cool, man. So you said you kind of got introduced to them like 9 years ago. What happened? Did you go on a hunt with them and kind of fell in love with the concept, or was it just you wanted to find a way?
Good. Yeah, that's a good question. No, I was sitting there talking with one of my buddies in the elk woods, and I told him how much I enjoyed a backpacking trip that I took with my wife, and how meaningful that was for me to finally have her in the backcountry. But all she did is bitch the whole time about how heavy the pack was, right? And so I was like, yeah, it was just great. But she's just constantly bitching and pissing and moaning about this backpack, and I can't do anything about it. And I hate horses, and llamas are just freaking ridiculous. And so, you know, I wish I could find a stock alternative, because, well, I've heard of people doing it with goats. You have to look into that. I was like, goats? Well, shoot, I had a goat when I was a kid, and it was a super cool critter. I'll look in. And so that's just kind of started looking, and bought a couple of adult goats off of Craigslist, bought two shitty saddles off of, you know, somebody that had them used on Craigslist, and went on the first trip, and it was freaking awesome. And I just never looked back. I mean, I kind of, you know, bumbled my way through it, learned how to do things, made tons of mistakes, sought out kind of some mentors that were, you know, out there in the world, and helped with the breeding, and just got better and better, and started fitting my own equipment, my own panniers, and my own training models. And, you know, here I am today, seen as kind of one of the global authorities on pack goats.
So when you, I mean, you live in Idaho, and you hunt a lot in grizzly country?
That's a good question. No, we don't. We only down near Yellowstone do we have them in Idaho, but I do in Wyoming. I hunt in grizz country, and it always is a little bit of a look over your shoulder thing. But I approach things like that in a similar way. Like, I know this is going to sound dumb, but whether my lady's going to cheat on me is out of my control. Whether a grizz is going to walk into my camp is out of my control. And whether, you know, my goat's going to eat a poisonous plant is out of my control. And if I sit there and fret about all three of those things, then all I do is I don't enjoy where I'm at. So I go in, I'm prepared, I have a good game plan. If something happens, I'm going to be ready. But I certainly don't sit there and fret about it all the time. So when I'm in grizz country, or just, I mean, in Idaho, there's bears, cougars, and wolves everywhere where I camp. Bears are the ones that I quote unquote worry about the most, because they're the biggest bumblers. They're, you know, they're not a methodical predator. They're not going to take a lot of time coming in. You know, they are an animal that is uncalculated in how they approach a potential prey or curiosity. Whereas a wolf or a cougar is methodical and super nervous and will take a lot of time and protect itself in that process. So I've had wolves and cougars within 50 yards of my camp many, many times, because I've seen tracks, but they've just never come in. I've only had one bear come into camp the whole time with pack goats. And bear in mind, I probably have over 4,000 trail miles now in the backcountry in Idaho with goats. I've had one bear incident. It was actually back in the day when I still thought it was okay to leave my goats in camp while I hunted. It came into camp, it chased the goats out of camp. I had to go look for them. I found them, and I learned my lesson that they hunt with me, or I have somebody with them in camp all the time. So that's kind of how that works. But
so,
yes, I've been in grizz country, and it makes me a little nervous, but not hugely.
So I saw a video. I don't know who it was. It may have even been you. This was a long time ago when I first started down the whole Western hunting rabbit hole and journey. And the guy had pack goats, and he left them in camp, and a bear came in camp, kind of scattered them all over. You went and got them. Then you had them with you. Was that so? That was you then. You had them with you, had a bull down. Here comes another bull coming in, and you guys arrowed the next bull with all the goats just meandering around right there while you were cornering up the other one.
Yeah.
That was your video?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that was like two and a half years ago, maybe even 3 years ago. I watched that video, and I was like, man, that's awesome. So,
yeah, that's Elkville. We have Elkville 1, 2, 3, and 4. That was Elkville 1.
Okay. Yeah. Those were pretty cool videos, and it piqued my interest. And, I've always kind of, and I've got a buddy that does have llamas and, does his whole business and everything. But for me, it's not really practical. Especially I live in the Midwest, you know, I mean, no matter what animal it is, I'm sure I'd have to acclimate it just like I'd have to acclimate. Right. But I think goats are just a little more practical for somebody like me or whatever, as long as I train with them and do that. What kind of stuff do you do to get your goats in shape for hunting season?
So I used to, you know, I always say 2 days a week is how you get them into shape. I used to do a piddle jog with them for 3 miles. It can be done in flat terrain, doesn't necessarily have to be done in, you know, in hills and mountains. I do it in the hills. I have a certain loop that I do. There's a 500 foot gain, and I piddle jog a 3 mile circle with them. Twice a week gets them in shape, takes a couple of, you know, six, 8 weeks to get them in shape. And then, but if I just do it once a week year round, they always stay in shape. Myself, because I've gotten so busy and I have so many goats, now, I'm still envious of the old days when I just had 4 or 6. That's really an easy thing to have. I have 17 now, right? So I have, you know, because I'm testing genetics all the time. So I have the old guys going out, I have guys in the middle, and I have new guys coming up. But as a breeder, I need to see how these crosses are working on the trails. So I'm constantly experimenting with new cross combinations. And to do that, I need a lot of goats. So for me to go out and run on the trail with 17 goats behind me is becoming impractical. And so, and at the same time, I hurt my back and I got a divorce and business got really busy. And so I was forced to 2 different years where in the off season, once November hit, I didn't really have them back in the field till September. So they had them on, or it's not September, but May, because May, June is when I start packing in bear bait. So they really had about 4 or 5 months off just to kind of be off and sit in the pasture and kind of get fat and out of shape. And what I found is that as long as I loaded them lightly, I could go into bear baiting season and move them through there. And then, excuse me, go into my summer packing season, which I pack into high mountain lakes almost every weekend all summer. And by the time I'm in hunting season, they are fit as a fiddle and ready to rip. And they're really ready to rip after about 2 months of conditioning. So it's just like you or me, you can't just get off the couch and go out and kick ass in 3 weeks of training, right?
Most of us.
I mean, maybe I could have in my 20s, but, you know, I'm 50 now. So I got to stay in shape year round. If I take some time off, it takes me a while to get back where I was. And they're the same. And they'll perform. They just won't perform as well as they could. You know, when you may have a string that's in really good condition, they'll snore with 50-pound loads. And I did 3 21-mile days last year on GPS. So 21 miles, one day. In Elkville 4, that's a video that they can watch, I shot a stud bull, and we had already had a bull down in camp. So we had hunted out that day, came all the way back to camp. We loaded up the one bull in camp, picked up my bull, went down to the trailhead, packed all the way out. That was a 21-mile day packing out 2 different bulls, and every goat was ready to fight again the very next day. So that's when they're in shape and they're kicking ass. But that was after spring bear season, summer packing season, then we rolled into hunting season, really put the hammer to them. And that was 7 goats. So we had 7 goats to pack. 2 bulls, 21 miles in a day. It's pretty good.
That's amazing. I wouldn't want to do that with a backpack.
I know, right? Yeah. We packed out of a drainage that was really freaking hairy and just a brushy bitch, and so we fought it the whole way down. We thought, God, let's go up that other drainage because we know it's not as furry. And we went up that, and that was like the bottom land was like tall grass, and it was all like rocks that were round. So you're just doing this the whole time. Every step was off kilter, and it was 11 miles of that. This is super gnarly. Yeah. That was a gnarly. That trip out back to camp was harder than the trip down with load. It was just the footing. The footing sucked the whole way.
That sounds terrible. That's one of those where not to shoot a bull, right?
Right. I go to so much effort to be away from people. My day just gets ruined by seeing a dude. And, you know, I've just always been that way. I'll always work harder than other people just to get away from. You know, there's a lot of hardcores out now. Backcountry is, it used to be kind of a mystery and it was easy to be alone. Now it's super hard. I bump into guys where I never bumped into before. It's kind of heartbreaking, to be honest with you, but, you know, nature of things.
Yeah, I'm probably one of those guys, unfortunately, that you're going to be bumping into, even though I'm trying to do the same thing. But, sure. So When you're running these and you're taking them in the backcountry with you, are you running them like, are they in a string or on a line, or are they
never,
just kind of?
I never have them tied up. They'll always follow you just out of herd mentality.
So do they always follow you, or I mean, do you have to kind of condition them from the beginning to kind of follow you?
No, the bonding process bonds them to you. And in goat world, if a doe walks the other way, the lowest rung of the string walks the other way, they'll all follow. So because I walk away first, they'll all follow me. It's just like this collective conscious. Goats don't walk away from each other. So if somebody's walking, then they'll all follow. So it's just how it works. That's so through bottle feeding, we take them away from their mothers while they're still wet. We bottle feed them from day one. They assume they're a human. They assume we're a goat. And so it's just, we're part of the herd. And we're different because we're the alpha. They don't ever challenge us physically. They're very loving. But you got to remember, goats aren't loving to one another. So we're unique in that we dole out love and we're the alpha. So we are the king of all alphas in that way. And these goats are like golden retrievers with horns. I would trust a small child. They're beautiful, loving, kind, personal, filled. I mean, it's the funniest thing to me because guys like us, I spend most of my life in a sleeping bag. I'm a hardcore outdoorsman. I'm a dealer of death in a loving way. I have that part of velvet and steel of me. So people, and I drive a big ass truck with big wheels and do all that shit, right? So people assume that I'm like this hardened mountain man, and I hang around with hardened mountain men. You get that kind of guy and me around a goat, especially a baby goat. They get all freaking lovey-dovey, start using their little kid voices and what are you doing today and tickling and, you know, pursing their lips and just becoming these giggly little girl men. And that's the way goats are. They break you down. That's the cool part about them, is that you'll fall in love with them too. You'll love them more than your dog. Your dog will become a pain in your ass, I guarantee.
So what I know of goats, I grew up kind of in the country and have a lot of buddies that had farms and livestock and all that kind of stuff and have raised goats. I mean, they are escape artists from what I've seen. You better have them squared away pretty good. And don't ever park your truck next to the pen and let the goats out, because they will definitely get on top of it. how do they do? I mean, do you got to really try and keep them contained, or what kind of fencing do you use when you got them, corralled up?
A happy goat with good food and water and shelter doesn't have wanderlust to get to the other side. I never have problems with my goats getting out because they like where they are. The problem with most people is that they take care of their goats so shitty. Their goats are desperately hungry for nutrition, and they try to get out of that pen because they're getting fed like shit. Unfortunately, as a stock animal, everybody assumes that a goat will eat anything. They're not. They're super particular about their diet. Learning about their nutritional needs, being foragers, is just something that, unfortunately, people make an assumption that they're these bomb-proof animals. And they really aren't. When I drive by pastures of goats, because I know what I'm looking for, I can tell you 90% of goats in people's pastures are super shitty nourished. They don't have good mineral. They don't have good food. They certainly don't have good graze. Any goat that's in a pasture with grass and expected to make a living off that is like the lowest rung of nutrition for a goat, is a blade of grass. They cannot live on grass. They will make a living and they will survive there. They're horribly nourished. So the reason goats have had a reputation of being escape artists is because they're just trying to find resources. My goats never try to get out because they got everything they need where they are, right? So I don't have electricity. I don't have a big, super tall fence. I mean, come see my property. It's nothing elaborate. And my goats never get out. It's just not hard to keep them in. Are well nourished. Now, that said, electricity does wonders, right? So I don't have electric fence at mine, but if you have a low fence, goats hate to be shocked. So all they got to do is know that fence is live and they'll never touch it again. They're hard on fences because they love rubbing on them. It's a good reason to use electricity. It's also a good reason to keep domestic dogs out. Domestic dogs, people's dogs, are the number one killer of goats. So they'll, people get into the pen and they'll tear your goats up. So having a good electric fence to keep dogs out is just a smart idea. But it's really not hard to contain a goat if you're taking care of them.
So let's talk about the nutrition then. What kind of demands and needs do they have, and what would actually be good browse for them?
Well, so almost nobody, I mean, it matters how many goats you have. If you have four to six goats, you're going to need 4 to 5 acres of brushy, weedy terrain. They eat very little grass, and they're still only going to eat on that about 8-9 months a year. If you have 40 acres, then they can at least go and forage, and they won't eat all their favorite things down, so they no longer exist in that pasture. But they have a very selective palate. They'll actually eat portions of plants, right? So you'll see them eat the top off, then they'll eat the leaves the next day, then they'll eat the flower. They're very selective how they eat. They'll eat a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and they'll eat on the move, naturally foraging. So if you're going to do a dry paddock, which has how most people do it, dry lot, you're going to feed 50-50 alfalfa grass hay mix. That's a perfect mix for most goats. You're going to test their water to make sure it doesn't have too much calcium, because they need a calcium phosphorus ratio that's 2-to-1, because then they'll build urinary calculi, which is a stone in their bladder that plugs up their penis, and they die of an exploding bladder. So there's a little bit of maintenance with that, figuring out what your ground is and what your feed is. And then you need a good open mineral. A loose mineral. It's just like you or me. If you eat a whole bunch of salt, you're thirsty after you get done. You drink water, you dilute your urine, and you don't create stones. So a good open mineral that's geared towards your area. Mineral, the reason we feed goats mineral is because the food in their area isn't natural goat food. So they're not getting the minerals that they would get in the high Swiss Alps where they originated. So we try to match the mineral to the area and what the feed isn't giving them. So I can't tell you what mineral to get. You have to actually ask the people in your area who raise goats and who are successfully raising goats. And generally, as a rule, the most successful goat owners are dairies. So if you know a goat dairy person in your area, they're going to put the mineral next to you.
Cool. That's good advice for sure.
Well, and let me mention this while you're here, because it's super important you know this. If people are scratching notes or trying to do that, I have courses on all these subjects. So I have a how to raise a baby goat course that'll tell you everything you need to know about raising a good, healthy, young packer. I have a course on Pack Goat 101. It'll tell you everything from how to load panniers, how to train your pack goat, how to teach him how to load in the trailer, how to nourish him long-term, how to lead train him, everything, how to set up campsites for predator deterrence. All those things are in a course. I have a milking course. I have a birthing course. I basically teach everybody through online courses that are video and written how to become a goat. So whether it's a hobby farmer who wants to have 2 Nigerian dwarves and wants to milk them, I got a course that'll show them. So all these questions that you have are super valid. And nobody ever goes to how to raise a goat school. I mean, vets don't even know how to take care of goats. Remember, vets spend 5 days on goats in school. So if you think you're going to trust your vet for solid goat advice, you have to become your own vet. You have to give shots. You have to know how to worm them. You have to drench them. So I teach you how to do all that stuff in these courses.
No, that's also very good. I was going to ask about that and get to that. So we could talk more maybe if there's more you want to talk about that. But I heard you mention that the minerals and everything that they get in, you know, the Swiss Alps. So are they the most, or your breed, are they kind of alpine goats then? Or what's the variety there?
So alpine is a breed, right? So there's several dairy breeds that come out of the Swiss breeds. There's the La Mancha, there's Oberhausli, there's Alpine, there's Saanen. Those are the 4 big ones. There's also Toggenburgs. I'm not really a super big Togg fan because they're kind of a weird species of goat. My cornerstone breeding that I like everything is Alpines, La Manchas, which are the ones without ears. They're probably one of my favorites. Alpines are one of my favorite. I love Alpine La Mancha crosses. I like Oberhauslis, but Oberhauslis are small as a general rule. I have my hands on almost the only giant Oberhauslis available in the country. You know, our people can get them through me. There's another breeder as well that has some good ones, but they're hard to find big ones. So don't just go buy any Oberhausli. And we want these goats to finish at 190 to 250 pounds. That's about 10% of the goats in America. So hoping that you're just going to go on Craigslist and go find the breed that I'm telling you and that's going to work. Most of those goats are little peanut goats and they're not well conformed and they're not what you're looking for. People can get goats directly from me. People travel all over the country to get goats in my operation. I'm middle of kidding season right now. I was telling you before the interview, I'm feeding like 22 gallons of milk a day to babies and people coming in from all over the country to get goats from me. But Alpines, La Manchas, Oberhausleys, Saanen is one, but they're pure white. I'm not a big fan of the pure white thing, but there is a colored Saanen called a Sable that I also mix into that. And then I avoid all the meat breeds, Boers, Kikos. Those goats are bred to eat. They get really fat. They're barrel bodied. They're not endurance athletes. They're kind of like trying to have a line and Spartan race. You want a tall, leggy, skinny guy to win a race for you. You know, that's what dairy breeds for.
Yeah, for sure. So with that being said, and talking about how you want like the bigger goats and everything like that, that's because the bigger and more muscular it is, what is it, like 30% or something of their body weight they can carry? Or what's the rule?
Yeah, the state, the rule is 35. I never load 35 because that's a hell of a load. They can do it, but I also want my goats to pack for their whole lives. And, you know, I choose to add another goat to the string and downgrade everybody by a couple of pounds than have everybody super heavily loaded. So generally, as a rule, 30 is the upper end of what I do, and I like to be closer to 25. 25% is a good heavy load for a goat. They can do more, but I also like mine still to be agile, to be able to cross over logs and do big mileage days. So if you're going to require a big climb out of them, agility, off trail, long day, you can't load them down at 35%. It's just a lot of weight. 25, they can do it. They're in shape easily, and even 30, but you know, you need an 18 to do that. Super good genetics. I always tell there's three things people need to invest money in to get an impact. Top end genetics. I believe I'm one of the best sources for that. There's a couple other people in the country I trust as well, and I'm glad to share them too. You need high end genetics. You need proven pack of stock. You need a good saddle. You know, the same as a good pair of Kinetrek boots. There's only one saddle that I recommend. It happens to be mine, but it's only because it's the only adjustable saddle. Goats' backs are shaped like this, like this, like this, like this, like this. If you don't have a saddle that moves to fit them, and you have one that's shaped like this, and your crossbucks are shaped like this, then they're getting 10% contact along the bottom. It's super hard on them. It'd be like you wearing a size 9 shoe and you're a size 10. I'm asking you to do 10 miles. It's ridiculous to not put a fitted saddle on a goat. They just have too much variance in their back. So we have the only fully customizable, fittable saddle. It costs the same as a pair of Kinetrek boots. It's about $460. You need to be prepared to get a good saddle. If you want to go cheap on your panniers and your collars and your leashes and your high lines and all that shit, have at it. Don't buy a cheap saddle. And the other thing is your education. You don't know how to raise a baby goat, you're not going to raise a good goat. You need the education and know how to take care of them. I have people that follow the program. They have goats that finish out at 220 pounds. I can sell their buddy their twin. He doesn't go at the course. He doesn't follow the program. That goat finishes out at 170 and he's malnourished. I see it over and over and over again. So three things: education, a good saddle, and the right genetics. That's the way to start.
So when you're talking saddle, you're talking like a pad with like the rack for the panniers, right?
Correct. Yeah. So it's a crossbuck, a traditional, like you're going to put on a horse or a mule or a llama. It has to actually have room for the spinous process. You can't put weight. So it rests on the ribs on each side. And then you have two ears that come off each side. The other thing about my crossbuck, traditional crossbucks come up and then they cross right up here, right? So you have a saddle that sits like this, and then you have crossbucks that come off, and then you hang the panniers on each side of that. With a goat, they're the only stock animal that's super good at about going under things. So if you leave 4-inch crossbuck up on top, all it does is hook on everything. So what I did is I rolled the ears down to the side. So now you lose 4.5 inches on the top of the saddle, and a goat can go underneath structure. And so that's just another of many advantages of this saddle. The other thing, and you can watch my videos on it, because of how a goat is built and because the saddle wants to creep up on their wethers, You can't get proper fit if you have the cinch coming off the middle of the saddle where it traditionally goes. You have to bump it further forward. Nobody has that either. So again, unfortunately, because goats get considered as just this second fiddle animal, they've never had saddles that have truly fit them until the one that I put out. And there is one other saddle that does, but it's a soft saddle design. It's a good one. It's called the Sobris. It's equally expensive as mine. But the problem is it's a soft saddle design, so it's reliant on super heavy cinch pressure to hold it in place. And it's like you or I wearing a, 12-pound weight on our chest and trying to breathe in the backcountry. It doesn't work to have our chest compressed to hold that back on. So good design, smart idea, poor cinch design, so it doesn't fit. So again, that's just the way it is. If somebody else had a better saddle, honestly, I would buy theirs. I'm not here to sell saddles. I'm here to keep goats comfort.
Right. So when you're loading them up, then what are we talking? Like 15 pounds per side kind of roughly is kind of your goal there then?
No, 25 to 30 a side. My goats average like 215. So 30% of their body weight, I can put 60 to 70 on a good goat. The saddle weighs 7.5 pounds and I can put, 25 to 27 each side pretty easily.
So you're doing that and like, say you go somewhere where there's not a whole lot of water or something like that, or say you're hunting like the high country in Nevada and you got to pack mm-hmm. in your water. Are you needing to pack in water not only for you, but for the goats too? Or how would that?
Yeah, if the feed's really lush, they don't need a lot of water packed in for them. They'll get by on their own. It matters how hard you're working them and how hot it is, but it's really easy to pack in enough water. Cause if I have five goats, I can easily get away with three carrying camp and goods, and I can have two. Water's 8 pounds a gallon, so I can haul a hell of a lot of water. I can haul in 100 pounds of water on two goats. I mean, that's enough for at least 5 days before I have to drop down to retool up. So hauling water for goats and yourself is really simple.
So are you carrying feed in with them too then, or are you just letting them browse the whole time?
Yeah, they're just browsing. Sometimes late season when it's really hard on them, it's cold and the feed is shitty that time of year, I'll bring in alfalfa pellets, but I'll bring in just like a 25-pound bag. And I've only done that like twice in 9 years. So they're very resourceful and they can get on their own. I'll just watch them close and make sure nobody's looking lethargic, or, if the feed's really shitty, I'll make sure I pack it in. I almost never, ever pack in feed for it. That's one of the killer advantages of it.
So you said a bag. Are you talking like pellets, like pelletized food for them, or are you feeding them?
Yeah, okay. Like alfalfa pellets, yeah.
Is that kind of a staple then, even when you're back at home, or are you feeding them?
No, I feed it straight out of the pail, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they can't eat pellets full-time because their body needs, their rumen needs fiber to work properly. So a goat won't do well. 80% of their diet is roughage. That's why they eat things like bark and twigs and stems and all that shit, because they need bulk to do the process of fermentation in their stomach.
Right, right. So when you're doing that, and you kind of mentioned like when the weather's shitty, so are you talking like snow or something like that, or where the feed is covered?
Yeah, I mean, not as much that, it's that they're getting wet and cold and they're having to try to keep themselves warm. So I pack in a backcountry milker. So I'll bring a doe in with me. So my female will produce a gallon of milk a day that's 2,200 calories a day. So that means I get to leave food at home. I don't have to worry about it. I get perfect fat and protein. She's making it for me from leaves and twigs while we're walking. Right. So that's a super kick-ass aspect, right? And she's really easy to milk. She's nice to have in camp because she keeps the boys feeding. She's out feeding all the time. The boys get kind of lazy, but the girls are always eating. They're making milk, right? So I'll have a backcountry milker with me. And I adjunct on your question. What was your question?
So I was just saying the weather. Feed is scarce.
So what it allows me to do when I have a doe with me in the backcountry is I can measure nutritional stress on the goats. So what a backcountry doe allows me to do is have literally a measurable in how much milk I get. So I know because if a doe's eating well, she'll produce more milk. If she's eating shitty and she's working hard to stay warm at night, her milk production will fall off. So I can actually like have a physical test of how well my herd's doing based on how much milk my doe is making. Because like I'll bring a doe home from a backcountry trip and she'll be making a half a gallon a day in the backcountry. I bring her home and I get her grain and I get her alfalfa. Bam, we're right back to a gallon a day again. So nutrition is a huge part of it. And you will see a doe fall off as the trip goes. But that's how I've kind of paid attention to how well my string's doing is how well is my doe doing, right? If they're spending a lot of energy, it's like, you know, we have a product that's a goat coat. So it's like a raincoat for goats. And when goats get really wet, they have a hard time staying warm at night. So we have a tendency to try to keep them dry if we can. So we don't try to keep them warm with an insulated jacket. We just try to keep them dry. So we'll either bed them down underneath trees, we'll bed them down underneath the tarp, or we carry a little 1 pound goat coat. We'll put the coat on them and it'll keep them dry at night. When I coat up my doe, she has better milk production because she's not working so hard all night long trying to stay warm. Right. So that's kind of the process. It's what I try to teach people. If you make the goat work hard to stay alive, then he's going to have less energy to work hard for you. So work hard to keep him comfortable. You know, haul him well, feed him well, shelter him well, and he'll bust his ass for you. But he's just not going to have as much in the gas tank because he's putting it out every night just staying warm.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, how do they do in like snow then? I mean, especially if it's getting a little bit deeper, can they handle it?
As fine as a mule deer handle it. I mean, once they start post hauling and they're bellying out, they're going to struggle their asses off. But so are you at that point. So, you know, foot of snow, no big thing. 3 feet of snow kicks their ass and it kicks my ass too. So we're probably not going to hang out in 3 feet of snow. I'm going to head home.
Right. So I think I saw a video of you, speaking of the milk thing, you were milking the goat and then you put it in your coffee or something. You're making a pot of coffee in camp.
Oh, yeah, it's the most badass coffee ever.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't use cream at home, but in the backcountry, I'm always using goat milk in my coffee because it's part of the way I take the goat milk in, right? I don't just want to drink milk all the time. So I put it in my coffee. I put it in my soup at night. I use it in cooking. I'm using it in my hot chocolate, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, I love goat milk. It tastes delicious. But at the same time, when you're trying to drink a gallon a day, it's a lot. And I'd rather have it in my coffee, and my hot chocolate, and my soup. So, yeah, I do it.
Right. No, that's actually a buddy of mine kind of taught me that. He always puts heavy cream in his coffee when we go hunting, like especially like duck hunting or something. He's like, well, I don't want to be a D-bag and, you know, oh man, I'm hungry. We got to go get something to eat. Let's stop hunting. And he's like, if you put the heavy cream in your coffee and load it up pretty heavy, he's like, then you got your coffee and you got a little something kind of in your stomach for substance. But so that's smart for sure. you were saying, so how do you have to like refrigerate the milk
I always just keep it in the creek. I'm always camped next to water. So I just have a stainless steel water bottle and I'll keep it in the creek. And I milk every morning and evening. So I usually just consume the one half in the morning and then the other half of the evening.
No, that's awesome. That's pretty cool to do that. And I mean, like you said, you're using it for an indicator. So, I mean, that's a good idea. So now you're pretty much telling everybody.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, so now you're pretty much telling everybody, though, that you not only do you need that, but you need a kitted nanny with you, right? So one more to buy.
Yeah, right. Well, I have the luxury because I'm the goat guy to have, you know, we milk 8 gallons a day. So I have milk goats here all the time. So it's they're Cinder is my primary backcountry milker. She's experienced in the backcountry. She knows how to feed herself. She defends herself from the boys. But if you just have one, it's a really nice addition. The ladies they got a cool energy to them and they're just they're a cool critter. They got it. I don't know. I like having. She gets
the fire. So kind of lost you there a little bit.
Oh, so I said, I like having the girls around the campfire. They're allowed. They aren't campfire. You know, fight goats are aggressive.
Yeah. So how, after say she kids and she has the milk, how long will a goat continue to produce milk before she stops?
One of the super cool things about goats, they produce until you quit milking them. So it's a supply and demand thing. They fall off a little bit in their production, but you don't have to freshen them every single year like most other milk animals. And so they stay fresh in milk for a long time. So it's not every, you don't have to kid them every year to keep it going.
No, that's pretty awesome. I did not know that. So I always thought it was kind of like the same thing as, a dairy cow or something like that. So,
The other cool thing is their milk is naturally homogenized. So it doesn't separate into the cream and get all disgusting on top. It just always, the fat is always in there. So it's always just stays milky instead of separating.
No, that's awesome. So when you're transporting your goats then into the backcountry, I mean, are you hauling like a big trailer because you're hauling such a large string of them, or how do you transport them?
So I do a two horse trailer that's a straight load, and it has a little front compartment. It's actually a stock trailer, but that's only when I'm taking more than six. So I can haul six goats in the back of my truck. I invented a goat hauler that has side compartments that loads all the panniers and sides, and then six big packers will fit in the back of my Dodge truck. I don't have a long bed either. It's just a standard bed. So you'd be surprised. A lot of goats fits in a small place.
No, that's interesting. I mean, I always thought like maybe you could throw one of them, like you see the livestock things that go in the bed of the truck to where it's got the bars and the door that opens up. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I have. You have to have it enclosed. You can't have them get blasted wind going down the freeway especially with you coming a long ways. My goat hauler, and you can find it on packgoats.com. It has ventilation. It keeps the ventilation going over the top. When you haul goats, you have to give them enough ventilation to where they're basically breathing their own methane, because they're susceptible to lung disorders. That's one of their weaknesses. They have to have nice fresh air around them. So they can't be in like stagnant, pissy smelling air all the time. So you always have to have a little bit of ventilation, but not too much. You don't want to blast them. So my hauler has a big open gridded window in the back, and then small ventilations on top that run the air over the top of them, so they're not getting blasted, but they're still good
ventilation. So it kind of made me think of it when you were talking about they need to be like sheltered as you're transporting them. What kind of shelter do you use at home then? I mean, pretty much
a simple
anything?
Barn, three-sided box. You just need a roof and two sides. They can literally withstand almost any weather, good bedding. That, I mean, people are having them in Alaska and 30, 40 degrees below zero and that. As long as they have good beddings and a full belly, the way a goat stays warm at night is with a full belly. So that's another way you keep them well in the backcountry, is you get them a good feed. I like to say that, you know, a hardworking packer needs about an hour and a half in the morning and an hour and a half in the evening to just go out and feed, fill its belly to be ready to work for you. And it's that evening feed is super important for them, because that's what allows them to have a full belly and then ruminate all night. And that process of rumination creates heat. So it's just like if you were to ferment foods, they have this little internal fermentation process going on. They have a belly full of food, they're warm.
Okay. So what are you putting down for, like just straw bedding or what?
I actually put little corner feeders in each bed, because they'll eat a little bit and they're quite wasteful in that style of a feeder. So they're always putting new bedding on top. And during the winter, when you have bedding stacking on top of bedding, stacking on top of bedding, at the bottom of it, it's fermenting, right? So it's composting, and the process of compost also creates heat. So it's emanating up through the bedding and it's keeping them warm at night. So I always like to have a small feeder in the pen that they lay on, and then they create their own bedding as a regular. Because in my area, straw is almost the same price as grass hay. It's, you know, $6-$7 a bale.
Well, well, that's kind of a little pricey. Yeah, I kind of do the same thing with the chickens in the wintertime, because it's too cold to get out there and scoop them out. So they have that actual, that live layer that keeps composting. It's the kind of the same concept really.
Yep.
So that definitely works. When you, I'm trying to think of how, when you're selling these goats, like, is there like a set price, or does it go based upon the animal, or how does that happen?
No, yeah, if people want to order goats from me, I still have babies still available this year. So if they want to order goats from me, it's a $275 deposit. My babies sell for $575. You come out to Boise and you get them. I spend about an hour and a half with you teaching you about goats, about my string. You know, I spend a lot of time with people. I teach them how to give shots. I teach them how to drench animals. I help them to understand the nutritional needs. The main thing is sending off a super healthy baby. We do more than anybody I know in chemically, nutritionally, and time with people to make sure that our goats are as healthy as they can be going out the door. Not only that, the genetics are superior. They're really leggy, big, you know, athletic goats that I feel confident are going to be solid packers, and we raise them right. And so when people come to get them, I feel like, you know, we put microchips in their tail, they get a birth certificate. And this is a legit real thing. So we don't take any part of our breeding operation light.
So with that being said, I've always heard that you don't just want one goat. So
you can't. Yeah, yeah. They're herd based, so they can't be alone. So you have to get two. I recommend most people start off with 3 to 4. I like when people start off with 3, because if you ever lose one, then you're not scrambling to go buy a shit goat to be his buddy if you only have 2. So if you have 3, at least you have kind of a reserve. If you have 2 as well, there's always going to be one that you don't like as much, but you're happy to have the other 2, and he's worth going because he's going to follow them. So, you know, I like to start people off with 3. They usually start off better with that.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, is it true like a goat will actually die of loneliness then? If they're not by themselves, or what tends to happen?
They'll be trying to get out all the time. That's another reason people think goats are escape artists. They put them in a pen alone and they'll do whatever they can to get out of that pen. I don't know I know that bucks often in the commercial operations will be kept alone in their own pen. And those guys kind of just like go crazy. They literally do. They have short lifespan. They're super weird. They kind of go insane. And I've seen goats. I'm not one of these bunny hugging, you know, thinking animals are like us and all that shit, but I literally have seen goats be depressed. I've seen goats that I pulled off of other farms, raised there, put them on my farm, and seen them be down in the dumps for months before they kind of pick back up again, start feeling like a part of the group. So they're a pretty high functioning critter. Really.
That's crazy. But I guess I could see it, right? If it's, you know, mistreated or whatever. Yeah. Especially cause they have that herd mentality for sure.
They do. And they're super smart. They're just super smart. So that's another thing as well.
So I got to ask you, have you ever had any problems with your gear and the goats like getting into it or getting eaten anything or like a sleeping bag or anything like that? I know you said that if you keep them nutritionally fed, but in the backcountry where they may or may not be having access to the nutrition that you're normally supplying them, is that like a thing or are they even more?
Well, all my goats are taught as soon as we roll into any camp where they're allowed and where they're not allowed, and it's enforced with a squirt bottle. So any goat who comes into the camp perimeter, I say get, and I squirt them, and then within 2 minutes everybody knows where they're allowed and where they're not allowed, and they just know they're not allowed around the food, around my tents, around the campfire. They're just not allowed in there. And it doesn't take that long. They're super smart. And, you know, they'll go other places. But I just keep them out of my particular area that way, so I'm not worried about them getting food all the time or whatever, because they will try if you let them.
Yeah, that's always kind of one of the things I thought about. And when I've seen pack goats was that, and I mean, I've never seen a video where somebody said, hey, you know, that I had a goat eat my sleeping bag or eat my tent or my shelter. But kind of always in the back of my mind, you kind of tend to think of that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, it's a good point. I do have a hole in one of my tents that my doe chewed one time. She was laying next to it. I caught her doing it. I was like, oh my goodness, you know, $500 tent. So
Yeah. There's been a few times where I've wanted to actually hit a goat, but it's not like it's going to do any good with those thick skulls, especially when I parked my truck next to the pen and my buddy let the goats out. That was my bad, really. My bad completely, because they all wanted to play King of the Mountain on top of the pickup. But
yeah, that's what happens for sure. So yeah, I really appreciate you having me on the podcast, and I hope that people get good value out of hearing both this, but as well, we have an extensive YouTube channel that answers a lot of these questions. It's under the name of packroots.com. The website is packroots.com. And you know, the fun part is I'm still a guy that'll pick up the phone. So if people have questions to ask and, you know, they want to email me or contact me on the website, I'm still available. I do have a staff of people that help me manage some of the online stuff, but at the same time, I'm still somebody who's easy.
No, that's awesome. I appreciate it, Mark. And thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge. And I'm sure if I embark down that journey, I'll be signing up for the packgoats.com courses for sure before I embark on it. And one more time,
it's a steep learning curve.
Can you tell everybody one more time where they can find the your content?
Yeah. So on Instagram, it's my name, Mark Warnke, is my Instagram handle. And then we also have pack.goats. So that's where you can follow kind of our corporate stuff. On Facebook, we have a Pack Goats group. It has my string across the top. It's the biggest group online on Facebook on Pack Goats. So it's pretty easy to find that way. And then I have packgoats.com YouTube channel, and then packgoats.com. Basically, I tell people, if you just Google anything to do with Pack Goats, I'm like the first 8 hit. So it's really easy to find me. And again, I'm more than glad to answer people's questions. I wouldn't expect them to, you know, go on and spend a lot of money on a saddle or, you know, a new goat, or, you know, be traveling a long ways without having a chance to talk to me and, you know, ask questions. So I'm always glad to help.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Take care.
And once again, thank you so much for listening to the Publicly Challenged podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please subscribe on whatever platform it is you're listening to. Also, if you could leave a review, that would help us out. And you could check us out on Instagram or at publiclychallenged.com. And once again, thank you so much for listening to the show.